Life Audio.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always in studio by my good friend, my partner in radio, Barnabas Piper. Pipe, part-time Ronnie is gone today. And it's such a shame because we're going to be talking about vacationing as an adult. And I feel like Ron vacations for a living. This is his purview, if nothing else, but
yeah, I feel like he would look at this episode and it would sort of be like those who can't vacation teach about vacationing or something.
Yes,
you know, sort of
right.
the old
those
adage.
Who can't do, yeah, those who haven't gained do, their talk. Life right, yeah. right in such a way as to always be vacationing. Yeah, so we're gonna talk about a thing that we're admittedly not as good at as Ronnie, but you know, we'll try. We'll give it the old college try, and we're gonna also talk some youth sports, Pipe, because we're in the middle of high school track season, which is an interesting deal that we'll get into after this quick break.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
All right, Piper, back. So I texted you last night at like 9 p.m. from a high school track meet that we were nowhere close to being done with. And high school track is an exercise in like sitting around for hours to watch your kid run around the track for like 1 minute. And it's ridiculous. You know, it's kind of fun, like depending on what other parents are there. It could be fun. It could be like a fun hang with your friends, especially if the weather's good. But it's a long evening. You were kind to push back our recording time in the morning so that I could have a little bit more relaxed morning. But you've done the like high school swimming circuit, which I gather is much the same.
Yeah, it is your description of sitting around interminably for hours is not an exaggeration to watch your child compete for somewhere between like 35 seconds and like 4 minutes, depending yeah. on the length of the event. I mean, it's just yeah. track and field and water.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I would say track meets have one advantage, which is there's some variety. It's yeah. not just the same. Like, all swimming looks the same.
Yeah, that's
Whereas,
true.
Like, if you get bored, you can go watch somebody, like, do the shot put or high jump. And, like, even if you don't know yeah. them, you're like, hey, look, different physical motion. There's some variety here.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, kind of damning with faint praise, but maybe a little better.
No, you're right. And, like, I always leave the track meets impressed by what I've seen. You know what I mean? I'm like, even kids I don't know in events that I don't care about, I'm always like, wow, like, they're really going for it. There's a lot of talent there. So it's an interesting kind of environment to be in while also being like just a tremendous waste of time, you know?
Such a waste.
Yeah. So I sit out there and even, so I always go into it and I always go with my wife and leading up to the track meet, we're always like, oh, this will be so nice. We can catch up on this and that. And we can like, she and I can talk, you know, because and I want to get your take on this. Like, I love my wife. I really do. But the busyness of life sometimes in certain seasons is such that, like, I feel like I almost never get to talk to her in like, a quality extended way. So we always go into this track meet feeling like, oh, good, we'll have time to sit out there and talk and catch up. But invariably, one or the other of our friends will show up, and that'll kind of whittle away at whatever time we have to actually talk. And Maxim's track team has an assistant coach who just comes over and talks, and you know, he'll talk to us for like the most of the night. And so as a result of all that, like she and I never really get like the long extended conversation that we think we're going to get. And I'm guessing in like the loud, like pool environment, it's the same way.
Yeah, it is. And now, my daughter swam on a team full of strangers. Like I didn't know any of the parents, which was great. I loved not knowing them because it meant two things. One, I didn't have what you were talking about. And two, I didn't get caught up into like crazy swim parent culture. You know, where we're comparing our children and the psychos who are always recruiting for some fundraiser or whatever. So I kind of got to avoid that. But the swimming environment, like unless you are at a, like an Olympic level swim center.
Yeah.
You're sitting on junior high sized metal bleachers.
Yep.
You can't do anything. You know, like, because the moment somebody sits down in front of you, like your knees are in your ears, they're leaning back into your inner thighs. Like this is all profoundly uncomfortable physically as well as just personal space wise. So yeah, if you wanted to pull out your laptop and get something done, can't do it. If you wanted to have a conversation, it's just a din constantly. Yeah. So yeah, it's not a productive environment.
No. So I have two questions. One, you know, rather forgettable, and then one more serious. The forgettable one is, do you enjoy the like pool smell? You know what I mean? Like you walk into a public high school, you breach like the first set of doors, and if you're anywhere near the pool, you can kind of faintly smell it. And then you get into the pool area and it's kind of oddly humid and laden with that like chloriney like pool smell. Do you enjoy that smell?
I do in passing, but
yeah,
it's a little bit like, you know, like if you go past like a mechanic shop, you know, you're like in the lobby, you walk in, you know, 'cause you're going to get your tires rotated or whatever. Yeah. There's just sort of that smell of like, there's oil and there's some gasoline and rubber. And like, it just sort of smells nice. But if you hang out in that garage, it stinks and you smell like it and headaches. That's the pool for me. So like you walk by, you're like, oh, that's kind of nice. And then you go sit in it for 16 straight hours and it's like a contact high.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you. I think I enjoy it in passing as well. So here's my more kind of serious question. I feel like, and again, this is germane to like the season we're in, and I'm old enough to know, and I've been through enough of these to know that like we're nearing the end of it. But due to like my work and KK's work, and I mean, to be fair, church, which we love, and all of which commitments we've entered into voluntarily, and then Maxim Sports, I don't feel like I get much quality time with my wife. Is this a thing that you recognize? And if so, like, why is it like this? You know what I mean? Like, why do we do this to ourselves? I have thoughts, but I want to hear yours.
It is very much like that. So like, you know, an average week for our kids is, and my kids are, I would say, compared to many of their peers, kind of average to low average in terms of time commitments.
Yeah, I would say that.
My oldest daughter's
true for Maggie too.
Yeah, my oldest daughter's not swimming anymore, because that was like a 5-day a week commitment plus every other weekend swim meets, and she didn't have any intentions of being like an Olympic swimmer, so we talked about it and she decided not to do that anymore. So she's working part time. So a couple nights a week she's working and babysitting some other nights and stuff. So she's just like pinballing all over the place.
Yeah.
And then my younger daughter is in dance. And again, it's not like, you know, Russian ballet studio where they're like binding the girls' feet and beating them with canes and stuff like that. But but it's a time commitment. So a couple nights a week for a few hours doing dance, and then church on Wednesday nights, and then somewhere in there, you know, we have friends. Hopefully.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, it is not uncommon for us to get to the end of like a 2-week stretch and go, we didn't like sit on the couch and watch a show.
Yeah.
At any point. We right. didn't, you know, it, everything is in snatches, in passing.
Yeah.
So yeah. And I think it's just, I think it's just the matter of like, it's capacity. You know, you think back, you think back to sort of pre-internet and the rhythm of things years and years ago. Mm-hmm. And there just was a rhythm of like, get home from school, dinner at home, homework. You know, even if people played sports, it was always through the schools and it was for a season. And so, you know, you would go from school to 2 hours of practice, home by, you know, five, and then that kind of thing. So, and now it's like, you know, programs outside of school.
Yeah.
Church, the society doesn't put, you know, it used to be that nothing was ever scheduled on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
I remember growing up, like youth sports, nothing was scheduled on Wednesdays because that, like, church still kind of held a societal place. Right. Now that's not the case.
Yeah.
And so things stack up. And and so it can get absolutely nuts.
It can. Yeah, it really can. Like, I've said to my wife from time to time, like, I'd like to have an affair with you. You know, like, you're my favorite person, you know, like, you're the person I enjoy talking to the most. I'd like to just run away with you and leave the cares and concerns behind at times. But no, it's crazy. And it's one of those things that I think the fault lies somewhere with us, right? Because like, you know, she's a chef, and if she just kind of does the basics of her business and doesn't take on anything new, then she's got margin, you know? And in her defense, like, if I did the same thing, if I wasn't taking on a whole bunch of other writing and speaking and, you know, all the kind of stuff that we do, I would have more time and margin too. But for some reason, and I don't know if it's ego or finances or whatever, but like, there's a sense of, if I say no to this, maybe the phone will never ring again. And oh no. You know, but yeah. then I widen out and I go, maybe that wouldn't be the worst thing. You know, maybe if the phone didn't ring again, it'd be fine. And also, God's in control of all of it anyway. So, I don't know. I wish I was better at like just saying no to things and being fine with it.
Yeah. I think this is the case for people who are not sort of doing like self-employment or side hustle kind of stuff. And that's where I get confused, because what you just said makes total sense to me, because you're sort of perpetually in the, my next opportunity might be my last opportunity.
Yeah, for sure.
But like, stay-at-home moms who don't have a side hustle feel like this.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that they have less responsibility. I'm just saying that there's a different cause there. And like, people who work one full-time job, you know, they are... Yeah. They're a, I don't know, an accountant or whatever.
Yeah.
They feel like this. And I don't know what that is. Cause you know, we're in a similar spot to you in that, you know, my wife bakes, and it's, I wouldn't say it's like an official small business, but it's like, it's a side hustle kind of thing. I'm currently in seminary. And when I wasn't, I was writing. And so there's always, I need windows of time to do this stuff. I need to, you know, get this project done by whatever deadline.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I resonate with what you're describing, but I talk to friends who are just, I would call them normal, you know, like your quintessential American dream friends, you know, he works full time and makes a good wage. She is home with the kids and is and loves it. And they're like, man, we never talk.
That's strange.
How did that happen? Because that's a different equation with the same answer.
Yeah, at that point, it's kind of you're choosing not to talk, which again, now we're getting into the like the weeds of what different marriages look like, which is fascinating, right? And I guess you see paradigms of it working if like one or the other party is like super quiet or just doesn't have like a whole lot of needs communication wise. You can see that kind of paradigm work, but
I mean, some of it is stage in life. If you have like. Yeah. A third and fourth grader in Little League and a sixth grader in soccer. And, you know, you have like four kids in four different sports. Then, the parents. So even if you have no outside commitments, you know, vocationally.
Yeah.
Your second job is unpaid Uber driver.
Yeah, that's true.
you're just a commuter to all sporting events. I've talked to my mom about this because, I have three older brothers. We all played sports. Often we were playing different sports. We were never on the same teams because of the age range. Mm-hmm. And somehow we didn't miss practices or games.
Yeah.
And I don't know how. Like, I think my mother had some sort of like, you know, have you seen the Harry Potter movies or read the books?
I haven't actually. Yeah, no.
Okay. So there's one where Hermione has, like, it's this little time thing. So she can go to multiple classes at the same time. And it bends. Oh, wow. I feel like my mom had one of those. That's how she got us places.
Well, I think you touched on it before, though. Like, back in the day, sports were the purview of school. And the season was always 10 games long. You know what I mean? It was It was just whatever sport it was 10 games, right? So like 10 Friday nights or Saturday nights or whatever night you played your games on, that was it. You had practice right after school, so you were already there, and then your mom could just pick you up from that. So it was kind of neat. It was kind of neatly contained. And now in the like suburban model of sports, you know, your baseball team is playing whenever you can get a field, right? So it might be, you know, 9:30 p.m. on a Tuesday night, 45 minutes away. And it's like, that's unwieldy. You're going to be recovering from that for the rest of the week, you know? And it's just strange. And like, I want to get your take on this. One last sports thing, and then we'll take a break and pivot to vacations. But like, my approach to how I watch my kids play sports now has completely changed from when they were younger and I was younger. Like back then I was a maniac. Like I really wanted to see them win, and I really wanted to, I was like taking stock of, are they giving their best effort? And I don't want to say I don't care now, but like, I really don't care now. Like I just show up. I'm sort of vaguely encouraging to everybody, including my own kid. And regardless of what he does, I'm just sort of like, and I know he's trying hard, but I also know that like track isn't a big priority for him. You know what I mean? It's similar to like what you said your girls were like in swimming, where like he goes to the practices. I don't think he works terribly hard. I don't think it's a huge priority for him, but it really doesn't bother me anymore. But then I go to these track meets and you see the dads who like come down out of the stands and they go through the gate. And they sort of stand in the track area to like yell and cajole and
and generally be a psychotic.
Yeah. And I'm like, I could see a version of myself, like specifically the version of 10 years ago who would do that. But like, I would never do that now. And it's just strange. And I got to tell you, I like this version a lot better. You know, I'm enjoying the meets a lot more now.
Yeah, I had the, it's as if God looked at me and said, well, you're hopeless. So we're just going to remove this temptation from you. So both of my daughters committed themselves to things that I know nothing about.
Yeah.
And so,
that's,
you know,
so nice.
And so I just immediately moved into the, like, yeah, I think you're doing a great job. Are you trying hard? Like, mm-hmm. which I will say, like, saying those words out loud is embarrassing to me. Because mm-hmm. that to me is like, oh, that's what you say when you don't care about winning. Like, good hustle, buddy. And but that's like, I don't know anything about ballet. So if like all I could do is encourage my daughter and like about effort and about commitment and about attitude and not coach her and not yell at her and not point out technique failures. And the same went for swim. And so if they had gone into soccer, well, I used to play soccer growing up. I know soccer.
Yeah.
And I know enough about soccer to get up in their business. If it, volleyball, basketball, softball, any of those, I likely would have been the psychotic dad.
Yeah, no, and I definitely was, like, football and track-wise early in their lives. But I guess I'm glad we hung around with it long enough to see that I had this version inside of me and I could not be a psycho. I highly recommend not being a psycho. It's feeling really good. By comparison. But Pipe, let's take a break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about taking breaks. We'll talk about what vacation looks like for adults. We'll be right back. All right, Piper, we're back. Aforementioned, the king of pampering, the king of vacationing, the king of not being here. Ron Martin is not here, so we're going to have to handle this on our own. But you are about to go on a cruise, and you went on a cruise a couple of years ago, and you indicated off the air that, like, getting ready to go on vacation has been an ungodly amount of work. And I resonate with this because we've had the same experiences. So talk about that.
Yeah, so vacation in a vacuum seems wonderful. Like, we're going to unplug. Yeah. We're not going to do anything. It's just me and the books that I've been intending to read and some wonderful food and whatever. All of that sounds great. Mm-hmm. What you don't realize is that, you know, everything we were just talking about with, you know, parenting during youth sports.
Yeah.
And side hustles and jobs, like, that stuff doesn't stop.
Right.
As you get excited about vacation.
Yeah.
So you basically have to do double the normal work.
Yeah.
To hit pause on doing the work so that you can go and not do the work so that you can do double the work when you get back.
Yeah. And, it's weird.
And so the nagging question, and of course, I'm in the thick of this. It's like asking somebody with a newborn, when are you going to have your next kid? The answer for me is I'm never going on another vacation. I'm in that phase. But like right now, the question I'm asking is this worth it? Like, it is easier to just keep going to work than it is to go on vacation.
That's such a good point, dude. And it's so funny because I do the is it worth it calculus so much that I probably ruin whatever experience it is that I'm trying to have. And again, though, I think there's some blessing in getting older in this, right? Because when the kids are young, like, things are just gradations harder, right? And you're like striving a little bit harder in your career and you're trying to do probably a little bit too much at all times. So yeah, I remember, especially when I was a little bit younger, like the act of going on vacation seemed like a sacrifice. Like, if I go somewhere for a week, then that means I can't work on my whatever. And then, yeah, to your point, I'm going to have to like double time it when I get back.
Yeah. And usually money's tighter when you're younger. So like a week off of work costs, as opposed to like, oh, they give us this time, I can use it.
Yeah, totally. Totally. But now it's like, it's all logistical now. So when we go on vacation now, it's like, we gotta figure out somebody to cut the grass and somebody to pay the cat or feed the cats. And like, you know, you're kind of dealing with all this. And these are such like uptown problems, right? These are first world problems. And yet, like, you go and then you get back and you kind of have to like, you know, swing everything back into motion, which is a lot of work. And it does beg the question, why do we do this? So I think KK and I have somewhat figured it out with this like Vegas thing we've been doing, which it's a really cheap flight. The flight itself is miserable, right? Like, you're flying Spirit, which we've talked about is like the worst experience of all time. But once you get there, you're kind of captain of your own ship. You can be as like private and reclusive as you want to be, or you can like interact with people as much as you want. And I've come back from those Vegas trips like truly relaxed, you know, truly feeling like I got to lay by a pool and read a book for hours and just talk to my wife and eat good food. And that's really all I want out of any experience. But it sadly, it's taken me to like late middle age to figure out how to do that, you know?
Oh yeah. And that, and see, that sounds, you know, you still have to do all of the like unplugging to get their work, but like once you're there, it's actual vacation. So, you know, we're about to go on a cruise, which, and I told you this beforehand, like this is a cruise that is given to the family, you know, you know, and so it's really generous. It's one of those things like I do not want to be an ingrate. Ingrates are the worst. You know, when somebody does something kind for you, you are like morally obliged and it feels right to be thankful. So I am.
100%.
Also, a cruise is not in the top 25 vacations I would pick.
Yeah.
It's just stylistically not for me.
I get it.
You know, and so it's none of what you just described.
Yeah.
You are not the captain of your own ship, literally or figuratively. You're quite literally on somebody else's ship.
Yeah.
You know, everything is scheduled. Everything is, you know, and my wife would absolutely look me in the eye and be like, no, it's not. We lie by the pool as much as we want to. And I'm like, the pool where there's loud music pumping in and a cruise director yelling at us,
right,
telling us about all of the planned activities and that kind of thing. And so this stylistically not the vacation that I would have picked.
Yeah.
I would much rather do the, like, I'm going to go to a place with absolute, like, I'm not planning anything. Maybe, like,
yeah,
going to a game or a show or whatever. And just
right,
wake like up and see what the day holds. Yeah.
Yeah, see what the day holds. No, I'm a huge see what the day holds guy. Like, and that to me, again, just sort of in my spirit, in like kind of in the ether, that is what vacation should be. Like, you wake up and you sort of meander around and decide what looks good to eat and what are we going to do. But it's real kind of loosey-goosey and relaxed. I really enjoy that. And if there's an activity, it's like one activity. Like to your point, we're going to a ball game. It starts at 7. You know, we'll get there. But
kind of a parallel is, you know, there are, if you go to a museum, you know, the Metropolitan Museum of Art or whatever, mm-hmm. in New York, any kind of prominent museum, the Louvre.
Yeah.
And you just explore and you just kind of wander. And then you find yourself in some side room staring at a sculpture that you're like, this is sublime. This absolutely blew my mind. And you couldn't find it again if somebody paid you. You just stumbled onto it.
Yeah.
That's amazing. If you go on a guided tour and they tell you, well, this is a classic and this is beautiful and here's why this is beautiful, you saw all the same art and you discovered nothing.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about vacation. I want to discover relaxation, not be assigned relaxation.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's really, really good. And there's something very distinctly American about the first paradigm, the one where you're going to the museum and someone's blathering in your ear and you're just like, I have to consume all of this as quickly and efficiently as possible. And at that point, it's just work, right? At that point, it's like, if I have to see every exhibit and have some guy, like, you know, yarking into my ear about it so that I can say I've seen everything, then I don't even want to go, you know? I want to run another vacation persona by you. And this one is born of, like, living in Michigan for many, many years where, like, cottage culture is a thing. And, like, KK, in her extended family for a time, had this, like, you know, her family had this really nice cottage. But...
Written about in the Happy Rant book. You tell a wonderful story about it. So let's not let listeners forget that we co-authored a book with dear departed Ronald.
Yeah, dearly departed Ronald. He co-authored, you know, a small portion of it. And you can grab that and read about all our vacation related baggage. But it was interesting to me always to, like, go up to this cottage with various members of the extended family. And there were always the dudes who would get there and feel like they had to work, like they had to putter on things at the cottage. So we'd get up there for like a week in July, and like one dude would be like, I'm going to clean out the gutters, and then I'm going to, like, wipe down the dock, and then I'm going to take the boat to the marina and get it serviced. And I'm like, huh. That really doesn't sound relaxing at all. But it was sort of this, like, Puritan work ethic, I've got to earn my relaxation kind of thing, where this dude felt like he had to earn his place at the cottage, so he would just go up there and work. And it was hilarious to me, and it looked miserable from where I was sitting. But then, like, part of that would kick in, and I learned that part of the culture of her family and part of being up there was, like, in the course of a given week, you would have to do one or two miserable things to, like, prove yourself. You know what I mean? So the miserable thing might be, I'm building a breakwater with boulders, right? And, like, some old lady is, like, sitting in a lawn chair, like, telling me where to put the rocks, and I'm out there, like, you know, hefting them around, you know? And it's like, it just occurred to me, you're doing one of these tasks at least to, like, earn it. You know, and it was really funny.
That's especially when you own your own vacation spot. You know, people are like, oh man, I would love to own a lake house. I'm like, that's just double the yard work.
Yeah.
And then with a lake house comes additional toys that require upkeep. Like, I have a hard enough time keeping, like, my weed eater running. I don't need to also be keeping the jet ski running and whatever. Like, boat people have to be tinkerers or just filthy rich. You only have two options. One, you are constantly like, the gas pump's not working on this thing. Right. Or or you're just constantly getting it serviced. And so, yeah, my style of vacationing is definitely go to places where other people do the work.
Yeah.
Because I would be that guy, because I have a very hard time not doing things. And if somebody else is working who, you know, voluntarily, I have a really hard time just watching them do it. You know, I'm going to be the, like, I'm going to jump in and help do the dishes. I'm going to.
Right.
Puritan work ethic, guilt complex. Yeah. My mother raised me right. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
I can't just sit and watch other people do the work.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. You know, I'm with you. And so, yeah, it always created this bind of, like, I can't enjoy sitting here reading my book while, like, you know, Jim is painting the cottage for the third time. You know, I got to go ahead and get up there on a ladder with him and just suck it up and do it. You know,
and when you bring family into it, extended family, because you now have the factor, and Midwest families are like this, like, you know that Jim and Jim's siblings and Jim's kids are like, man, Ted, the new guy to the family, he's kind of a waste of space. He didn't do anything.
Oh, 1,000%. Everybody's judging each other all the live long day, you know? So yeah, that's very much baked into the experience. And even, like, I remember going up there and kind of not knowing how to do anything nautical, you know what I mean? So they'd be like, hey, go, you know, pump out the bilge thing on the boat. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I've literally never seen water before in my life. I don't know how to do any of this. You know,
like Indiana has retention ponds. What are we even doing here?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how any of this stuff works. And yeah, like, they would ask me to do something and I'd have to, and this is really like a swallow your pride thing, especially at like age 20 or whatever. I'd have to, like, you know, wave my girlfriend / fiance over, now my wife, and be like, did you understand any of that? Like, please tell me what to do, because I'm going to be completely embarrassed here if you don't guide me through it. But I think part of it was like initiation. You know what I mean? Like,
for sure.
Yeah, it was sort of like hazing. They wanted to see if I could take it, you know? But
And it's there's a whole category of stuff that falls into the, like, fake manhood category.
Yeah.
And nautical upkeep is one of those things. You know, so I mean, I grew up in Minnesota, but I grew up in the city, like inner city. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I went to a lot of lakes, but we never owned water stuff. And so, like, I'm good with canoes and kayaks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about motorized water vehicles. Nothing.
Yeah.
And so you go out and spend a weekend at somebody's lake house. And there is sort of a, like, man card aspect to, can you drive the boat?
Yes.
Can you repair the boat?
Dude.
Can you tie a proper knot to, like, or, you know,
can you lash it to the dock?
The boat? Yeah. Without beating the thing up.
Without dinging it up. Do you know the exact time to sort of lean over and, like, start grabbing at things on the dock? And yeah, there's so much, like, unspoken etiquette.
Can you hop into the boat while it's being docked without stumbling around? Like, there's sort of like the balance on water. All of that stuff, you watch people and you're like, oh, I am not a man. I can't do any of those things.
Oh, 100%, dude. Yeah. And it's super embarrassing. And at some point I just kind of leaned into, if other dudes in the family want to sort of swing their manhood around in this way, like, I'm more than happy to just sit back. You know, I was basically like, I'm strong. If you need anything, like, lifted or dragged, I'm your guy. But otherwise, I don't know how to do any of this crap, and you're on your own. You know, like, that sort of became, like, my persona.
And I have gotten to the point, granted, I was probably like 37 before I got to this point, of just going, yeah, I don't know how to do that. Can you show me? And just realizing, like, there is zero either shame or you know, there's no neutering in going, I don't know what that part of the boat is that you just said to fix.
Yeah,
I don't know
totally.
What that thing, I don't know where that container is that you just said to get the flotation devices out of. So you're going to help me out here.
Dude. Yeah. And that was always the calculus, right? So, like, up at the cottage, and my poor sweet wife would be like, hey, do you want to go for a jet ski ride? And in my mind, I'm like, that does sound fun. But then I'm doing all the math of, that means going into, like, her intimidating uncle's garage and trying to find the keys and then trying to find the right, like, you know, life jackets, and then like trying not to ding up the jet ski as I'm getting it off the hoist that I don't know how to operate. And I'm doing all the math of it. And finally I'm like, that just sounds exhausting. That's like a half a day's work for like a 20 minute ride that will be fun.
Yeah. You know? And I have hives now.
Well, yeah. And then like, if anything goes badly, then you have to go in and like tell the owner about it, you know, like, oh, by the way, I blah, 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 blah. And you're just full of shame in that moment. You know, it's really, it's all too much. All I've ever wanted to do is lay by a body of water, read a book, and eat good food, and talk to somebody interesting if I feel like it, right? Like, to me, that's vacation.
Yes, but not make friends with people on vacation.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Talk to the person who I came with, you know.
I am utterly, and I think we have talked about this on here, but nothing has clicked in my brain to make it make more sense. I'm mystified by people who make vacation friends.
That is remarkable. It is. And I know people like this. Like, I'm related to some people like this who, like my aunt, she'll go on like a diving trip to Mexico and like remain buddies with those people for like a decade afterward. And I love my aunt. She's a remarkable lady, and I think the world of her, but I don't have that like gearing. Although I say that, but then I've made a few of those friends. Like, there was a dude on my Israel trip who I still talk to like almost every week, and that was 6 years ago, you know? So maybe I have it more than I think, but I don't go into an experience looking for it. I'll say that.
When the Israel trip is different because, like, you are assigned a group. You didn't, encounter them at the hotel pool and just like, hey, we're going to go to dinner together every night. Hey, you want to go on a catamaran tomorrow? Like, no.
Right, right.
I don't know. You might be a serial killer. I'm not hanging out with you. You know?
Hey, tell me this about cruises. And keep in mind, I've never been on one. And everything I know about cruises, I've learned either from television commercials or David Foster Wallace's essay, A Supposedly Fun Thing I'll Never Do Again, which is about going on a cruise. Do you get assigned, like, a table for dinner with other people who you're then dining with for the rest of the week? Or is that, like, an old-school cruise thing that no longer happens?
I'm not sure. So, I have been on one. This will be my second. And it's a large family group, so like 10 of us total, 12 of us, because of, you know, some various extended members of the family. Yeah. And so we just sort of have a table or a couple tables adjacent to one another, and we go to the same tables every time. So it's assigned, but not with strangers. Maybe they still do that. I wouldn't be surprised. But I think they have it set up a little bit more like a restaurant in that they sort of arrange it. So like if you're two people, right, they'll seat you just as yourself.
At a two top. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Not like at a table of eight with six other strangers who you're obliged to like for the week.
Yeah. Yeah. That, when I read that in Wallace's essay, I was like, ooh, that would be a hard no for me. I would try my darndest to make like other dining arrangements.
So here's the one exception to that. This is outside of cruises. There's a restaurant in Nashville called Monell's. Uh-huh. And it's like awesome sort of soul food, down home, comfort food kind of cooking. Yeah. And they serve everything family style, and they seat you family style. So if you're a group of three, they're going to put you at a big long table and pack it out with seven other people.
That's fascinating.
Which, you know, if you just want to go on like a date, it's not great. If you just want to kind of go and have a dining experience, the food is awesome. It's all you can eat, and it just keeps coming out. You don't order. They just serve what they're serving for that meal. And, and then you're going to meet people like, but you're only going to meet them for 90 minutes and then you're going to go on your merry way. So that's like my dose of assigned friendship. I'm like, okay, I can rock Monell's once or twice a year. Yeah. That's good. On a cruise where every night you're going to dinner and you're like, you have to go shower because you've been out by the pool or in the ocean or whatever. You got to go shower. You got to go put on real clothes.
Yeah.
Then you got to go sit with strangers for like 4, 5, 9 nights.
Yeah.
Oof. That's a lot.
Yeah. The Monell's model is kind of the same social contract that you get at a sporting event, right? And I do like that. So, like, if I'm at a Titans game and there's a, like an interesting guy in my section and we end up talking about like, oh, I can't believe they're going with Tannehill again this year. You know, we'll talk about the draft or like some legitimately pleasant thing. But the contract is, this is over in 3 hours. We're not exchanging numbers and we're never going to see each other again. I'm actually kind of like interested in those sorts of relationships, you know, because it's like interesting to see what the cat drags in. But there's no mandate to do any work on the back end.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, and in that context, there's like a defined set of rules. Like you just said, you know, if you throw out like a funny taunt at the opposing team and the guy next to you laughs, like, okay,
yeah.
I have my rooting buddy for the next 2.5-3 hours.
I've got my baseball game friend, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, but even that has rules because it's not like you're getting up to go to the concession stand and be like, hey, you want anything? You just like
exactly.
Go and come back. He's on his own for all that stuff. There is no obligation to care for him, just to be amused alongside him.
Exactly. No, yeah. And that in and of itself is relaxing, right? Because the relationship has boundaries that neither party is crossing. And sadly, Pipe, I have a time boundary on this episode that I run the risk of crossing if we keep talking. But we've gone 40 minutes. We've done what we always do. And until next time.
We want to take a moment to thank the team at Life Audio for partnering with us on this podcast. Be sure to go to lifeaudio.com and take a look at the other podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
Hey there, it's Nicole Eunice from the How to Study the Bible podcast, and I'd love to invite you to join us as we weekly discover a passage of God's Word together. From beginning to end, from principles to practicals, we are here to make sure that God's Word is powerful and relevant to your life. If that sounds like something you're looking for, I would love to invite you to subscribe. You can go to lifeaudio.com and search How to Study the Bible, and we'll see you there.